is Channel 2.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
Welcome back to the Business Bunker show here on Channel Radio in association with Biz Radio. You're listening to me, Paul Andrews, and the lovely, luscious Linda with our guests Terry and Ali in the studio. We've still got tweets coming in, which is lovely. Do keep tweeting us. I've had a tweet from Sarah Marsh Collins. Could we get a shout out for the Macmillan Coffee Day, 10 to 4pm tomorrow, manana, that's Wednesday, at Newman Flexible Workspace in Bromley. Some fab raffle prizes on offer. And she's tagged in a couple of users. I think that's Chandra Sharma she's tagged in. Oh, here we go. There's some more info about it. 28th of September. Oh no, it's a different one. Sorry. Also a shout out for Elmcroft Business Macmillan Coffee Morning on the 28th of September in Swanley. Elmcroft Coffee and Cake event. The host is Chandra Sharma, and it's 2pm to 3:30pm on the 28th of September, and it's at Jazz's Cafe, Unit 9, Park Road, Industrial Estate, Swanley.
And Sarah Marsh Collins has said, I used to love my Toyota Hilux.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah, it's a pickup truck. Did you see the little guy in the back with a shovel?
Yes.
Cool. Do keep your tweets coming. Tweet me or the lovely Linda Cloak. Use the hashtag BBunker and then we'll find you and we can read your shout out or your comment or your viewpoint or your opinion or whatever it is you'd like to tell us. Okay, Linda, you can read an email if you've got any left.
I have one left.
You've read them all. Blimey, you're efficient, aren't you?
I'm not going to say anything. Leading food brand McNaid is celebrating its 175th anniversary with huge birthday bash. The Kent-based food and drink retailer is inviting visitors to its flagship Faversham Food Village to mark the occasion on Saturday, September the 17th.
Gone.
It's gone.
It has.
That's too late. I've missed it.
Sorry, guys, you've all missed it.
Anyway, they celebrated 175 years.
You can still go there, though.
What a great celebration.
Lovely.
Actually, I've been there. I went there and met a friend for coffee the other day.
It's fantastic, isn't it? It's lovely. There. Yeah.
I met my fiancé there on a blind date.
Did you?
It's a perfect place, actually, for dating, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh.
It wasn't 175 years ago, though, was it?
Just feels like.
No.
I'm joking.
Yeah, of course. Okay, I'm going to read one then. You've finished, have you?
I've finished, yeah.
Okay. You were talking about this earlier, so I'm going to give it another shout, because we did give it a shout before. The brave BNI Pioneer chapter hot-footed their way across several metres of firewalk, raising a whopping £1,335 for Kenwood Trust. The firework took place on Friday the 2nd of September at Kenwood Trust. 13 members of the BNI Pioneer Chapter have carried out 3 fundraising events this year alone, for a BNI Golf Day, to an exciting 5 Who Skydive.
Yeah,
that was your L. That was your L, didn't she? Do you know, she said, are you going to come and watch me? And I went, I'm going to try. And I drove past the airfield to go to my mum's every day. And I parked up because I saw the plane going up. And I saw them all jump out, but I couldn't tell if it was L or not because I didn't bring any binoculars.
She said that she wasn't sure if she'd do it again. She looked like she didn't enjoy it, but her boyfriend Dan really enjoyed it, and he was going whippy on the way down, which was really great for us on the ground to hear.
I don't want to put anybody off. I really don't want to put anybody off, but this is going to put people off. 2 weeks ago, I was driving past, and they all jumped out of a plane, and one of them was in a spiral, hurtling towards the ground, and I thought, oh my god, I'm going to see this person pile into the ground. Luckily, they opened the reserve chute about halfway down and actually got down safely, but it was they were tangled, and you could, you know, as soon as you can see a parachute tangled, you know that it's going to plummet.
Maybe I'll do the plane walk instead.
You did the plane walk.
No, maybe I will do the plane walk instead.
That looks fun. You quite often see them coming over my mum's house. My mum lives in Headcorn near the airfield, so you quite often see them. You know, somebody they're like Wallace and Gromit, aren't they?
It's very cold, apparently.
Yeah,
that'd be very good for my complexion, would it? Really? Maybe not.
I don't know. It probably gives some blood to your cheeks, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Hold on. Oh, my phone's gone off now. Oh, for goodness sake. I hate technology, I really do.
Glen Jewels.
Mm. Andrew Price and Barry Battersby from the Fraternitas Lodge recently presented a generous £2,000 in support of Kent's leading alcohol and drug rehabilitation charity, the Kenwood Trust. The Freemasons of Fraternitas recently heard of the outstanding work the Kenwood Trust provides. They were particularly impressed with the focus of Kenwood in the community, which is a preventative early intervention and outreach focused substance misuse youth service and substance education program for schools in Kent and Medway. It's delivered by a lady called Kim, who sadly lost her son to drugs, and she does a fantastic job of informing, educating and inspiring young people away from drug use, basically. And we have tremendous goodwill for Kim, because it's a hard thing she does, and she does it incredibly well. Kim's event was recently highlighted on BBC South East as well. Anyway, these two lads, Andrew and Barry, raised £2,000. So thank you for that. Fantastic stuff. I'd ask you to read something, but you haven't got anything to read, have you?
No, and I can't see any tweets, actually, at the moment.
Are they all dried up? They all tweeted themselves out?
It looks like they're...
Come on, yeah. Tweet, please. Linda needs something to read, so you need
Jules,
to tweet.
Where are you?
Yeah. Anyone, any of you can tweet. You can all tweet.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Surely somebody else is running a coffee morning. Anyway, I'll tell you what, while we're waiting for that, why don't we talk to our next guest?
Absolutely.
It's a pleasure to welcome back onto the show Ali Young of Ali Young Law. Ali, lovely to see you. Thank you for joining us again. It's quite a while ago you were on last time, wasn't it?
Do you know, it was nearly a year.
Is it really that long ago?
Because it was just after my birthday last year, which is actually on next Tuesday, 27th. It was a big birthday last year, and I brought cake. Do you remember?
Yeah, I do. And I probably ate it as well.
You did?
Yeah.
And Jules loved it.
I'm sure she did. Anyway, happy birthday for next Tuesday.
Thank you very much.
We will give you a shout out next Tuesday on the show to do that. Yeah. Are you having a cake again?
Well, the fact is, it's my daughter's birthday the day before.
Right.
So I will be having cake with her.
Right.
But then, as you and I discussed, we're on a bit of a diet.
Yeah,
so
true.
I'm going to try and avoid it on my actual birthday.
Okay.
But my daughter, I have to just tell you, she's tuned in. She's 18.
Right.
So I don't know what your demographic is, but she's really...
It's lowered it considerably.
Yeah. I thought it might.
Yeah.
And she's really enjoying it. She loved the alpaca joke.
Did she?
Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
She
What's her name?
Great. Maisie Young.
Maisie Young, you're a star. Thank you.
And she said you sound very intelligent.
Oh.
Thank you, Maisie. But then she did disappear for a bit when you were on. She's not interested in driving at all. She's 18, but she won't learn to drive, which is fine because she lives in London. So.
Well, that's fine. I mean, funnily enough, I was late. I always had a motorbike as a kid, but I didn't pass my driving test until I was in my 20s because I lived in London and there was no point in having a car then. It's even less point having it now. It just costs you money to drive it off the drive, doesn't it? I mean, so Maisie, I'm totally... Whereabouts in London?
She lives near Hackney.
Oh, so does my son. My youngest son lives in Haggerston, or whatever it's called. Yeah, which is Hackney. Yeah.
I think they all like to live in Hackney, don't
they? Yeah, they do. It's the place, isn't it? When I was growing up, it's a place you avoided.
Yes.
You never went to Hackney, you know. Where Stu live in Haggerston, there's a plaque on the wall saying the home of the Cray twins. Seriously. the place to be, isn't it? Hoxton, Hackney, Dalston, all around there. Good. Well, thank you for listening, Maisie, and lowering our age group considerably. Is she 18 next week? Or
no, she's going to be 19.
She's going to be 19. Yeah. Blimey.
Yeah, she's a big girl, big grown-up girl.
Yeah. Is she at uni or is she working? Or?
No, she's working.
Right.
Yeah, she's living and working in London and not interested in education anymore.
Don't blame her.
As I think a lot of people her age have decided.
Very sensible. Yeah. Very sensible. You don't want to run up debts.
No, unless there's a point to it all.
Yeah, so. Exactly. Unless you have to have that degree for whatever it is you want to do, it's not worth the money anymore.
Yeah. Well, she's very clever. She could do anything she likes. But so I'm just waiting to see with excitement what she does, because she's going to do something amazing, I'm sure of it.
Well, one of the things is, and I do a lot of talks in schools and I run some programs in schools, and I try to impress on young people this fact that has always been a truism, but it's now more true than it's ever been, is that careers don't really exist unless you make them. because life changes so quickly. What you thought was a good move 5 years ago might not even exist in 5 years' time. And likewise, something you'd never heard of suddenly becomes a thing. So basically, the whole idea behind a career is to become flexible and strategic and just watch how things move and go with the flow.
And also learn about yourself.
Exactly.
So I'm a governor at a school near Dover, and my area is careers. And I'm really, really keen that young people are allowed to learn about themselves before making big choices.
Yeah.
Because you can, you know, you can make big mistakes, and there can be expensive mistakes. So, she's at the University of Life and loving every minute of it. So, yeah,
absolutely. And you know, one of the finishing off on that, one of the things is that if you talk to employers these days, whilst qualifications and education are interesting, what most people want are life skills, communication skills, as you say, understanding yourself, knowing yourself, and being able to participate at a level that, you know, enables you to learn. We got this funny idea that you have to know everything before you can do anything, and it's just not true. You know, even less so now than it ever was.
But doesn't that come from when you used to go to a job? There was a period of time where they would say, unless you've got a university degree, you can't even go for it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I remember being told that when I worked for TBS.
Yeah, absolutely. It wasn't even true then.
No.
People used to say it.
I think it was an easy way to screen.
Yeah, it was, yeah. People are just lazy when they're screening. I tell a couple of stories about this. I shouldn't tell this story. I really shouldn't. I worked for an investment bank, and it was a very, very well-known investment bank, you know, probably the most powerful investment bank there is. And they used to have this thing that said they only ever hired people with a first from Oxbridge or summa cum laude from Harvard. I got 50 yards breaststroke, right? And that was my highest qualification. And I was the chairman of the interview panel for recruiting people, where we used to tell them this. And you go, yeah, right. But the funny thing is, I worked in technology, and everything at this bank was done by panels. Yeah, so even if you were the line manager, there was a panel. And we were recruiting a systems programmer. And this is a bit arcane, but basically we were asking for 5 years' experience of VTAM release 5. And the first couple of people we interviewed had VTAM release 3 or 4, and they were going, no, it's got to be 5. It's got to be 5. And turned them down. And this incredibly long-legged, blonde Swedish girl turned up. And they started interviewing, and they said, all right, have you got VTAM level 5? And she went, no. In fact, I've never worked on VTAM. I've only worked on TCAM. And they went, that's fine, you'll pick it up. And they hired her.
Wow.
It was the 1980s. Yeah. So there you go. Anyway, Ali, look, thank you for joining us. Nearly a year since you were last on, and you're looking as fantastic as ever. So that year has suited you very well.
It's been a good year. I launched my own law firm in March.
You did. So why don't you tell us about that? Why don't you tell us what inspired you to do that and how it worked for you?
Oh, well, many things have inspired me. Mainly a group of women that I started to work with over COVID.
Yeah.
So lawyers like me who were working as self-employed consultants.
Yeah.
And one in particular who had launched her own law firm was just, you know, made me realise actually I could do it. And you know that thing where for years you think, oh, it's not my thing, it's not for me, I'm not brave enough, I haven't got the mindset to do it. I'd never thought I'd be doing it, but something about turning 50 last year made me go, do you know what? I probably could do it, actually, if Emma Jane's done it. And thank you, Emma Jane. I think she said she was going to listen, so hopefully she's listening. I don't know if she tweets either. We're not very good with this tweeting thing, us lawyers.
See her on there.
I think we're a bit scared of tweeting. I think we're scared someone might sue us.
Yeah. It's funny you should say that. I quite often tag you in when people annoy me. I go, he's my lawyer. You tell them that.
Yeah, always be careful when you're tagging a lawyer.
Yeah.
It might cost you, Paul.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You send the bill and then go, what is it you wanted? Yeah.
Oh, you know me, I'm good value.
You certainly are, yeah.
So, yeah, so I just thought, do you know what, sod it, what can go wrong? And it's been incredible. So,
right.
And I've got a great team. One of the big things is getting a team of people around you.
Yeah.
Because before that, I was just plodding away on my own. But I have a virtual assistant who's been transformative. Mm. I have a great social media team around me, Linda. So yeah, and it's being able to rely on other people and trust other people, which for a while I wasn't very good at doing.
It's hard to do that.
Yeah,
it is hard to delegate. It's hard to let go of responsibility. Mm. It really is. Mm. But until you can do that, you can't really build a business.
Exactly.
Yeah, because it just becomes you with some others.
Yeah. And it's such an important thing when you've been working for a long time, as I have for 25 years as a lawyer, and my reputation is everything.
Yeah.
And when people come to Ali Young Law, they do want to speak to Ali Young. They do want my experience and my knowledge and my advice. So growing a business where you are really important to it is difficult, because you don't want to waste all those years of building a brand and weaken it by having someone come along and do something that isn't the way you want it done. But I was speaking to Gemma Fairclough-Haynes, who I think you know very well.
Yeah,
she's done really well building her business. And she had a little joke the other day, because she said she went away on holiday and properly went away and came back and realised that actually the team around her did quite well without her. So, so that's my next step, is to go.
But it is true, you know, people say, because I've got a lot of businesses and stuff like that, and they go, hey, where do you find the time? I go, I'm bored most of the time. I don't do anything because I've got people that do it.
Mm.
And you've got to get to that point where you know, the skill is to build the team, and to use your talents to identify the right people. And then the next skill is to let go. And that's the hardest bit of going, don't tell me. Don't, you know, unless you really, really, really need my advice, don't even tell me. Just do it. It takes some time to get used to doing that, though, because, like all of us, you know, it's not that you don't trust the other people. It's just, you know, you want to know, don't you? But then you get to the point where you don't want to know at all. You know, don't bother me with it. Sort it out.
Well, it's a good point, because now I've got this challenge of being way too busy, as often is the case once you start a business, and working out what the next phase needs to be. So, so I've been working with a business advisor, which is also something that I would never have wanted to do before, because I'd had business coaching before and it didn't really sit well with me, because I felt it was all a little bit too navel gazing and stuff.
Cliched.
Yeah. And I thought, oh, I don't need someone just spouting that stuff at me. But no, Philip Pilgrim, I've been working with from Smart Marketing, and he's been really great at honing into, like, the first meeting I had with him, we were on my zero and looking at my profit and loss and my budgets, and I'm like, whoa, this is the sort of business advice that I need, like someone drilling into my finances in a way that I haven't done before. So there's lots of things that have accounted towards getting me where I am today, but still so much to learn and so much to still do. But I'm loving it, absolutely loving it.
It's an interesting facet of running a business, that you end up doing stuff that you wouldn't normally do. And it's important that you know your numbers. You know, that's the bottom line of it. If you don't know your numbers, you can't really tell where you're going as a business. And one of the things that throws so many people is once they get a customer, they think that's it. You know, I've got a customer, and then I've got two customers, and then I've got a dozen customers, and then I've got 50 customers. What they never think about is, are those customers valuable or not?
Really, really good point.
Yeah.
Retention is key, isn't it?
Well, but it's also understanding whether your customers are actually profitable or not.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's something as a lawyer that I've been really bad at doing. So we've been doing some real number crunching and doing some spreadsheets. I've got my VA helping me with spreadsheets and working out which of the people I do better out of. And that's not to say I don't value every client, because I do. But to be profitable, you have to know whether the work and the people you're working with are.
There are some clients that aren't valuable. You know, I'm not, you know, putting it, but, you know, it's a truism. You know, this is why you have to look at this, you know, because you might have a client that you think is a really great client because they're, you know, they're forever talking to you. But if you look, you suddenly find that you don't make any money out of them. They take up most of your time with stupid questions that you can't bill them for. Yeah. And you go, well, you know, why am I doing this?
And yeah. I'm an enormously helpful person.
Yeah.
And as soon as I see someone that needs help and wants help something, them. I want to help them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that can send me up some, you know, dark alleys and yeah. rabbit holes and all sorts.
And there's nothing stopping you doing that as long as you're aware that they're not a very useful client. Yeah. Yeah. By all means, you can continue to help people. As long as you're aware of where your time's going and why all of a sudden when you get to a point where you've got loads of clients and no income, you kind of work out why.
Yeah, a busy fool.
Yeah, yeah. You know, there's not, you know, I'm not saying it's a large number of your clients. You just need to know. And that's where knowing numbers yeah, comes in. Mm. Okay, so Ali Young Law.
You're going to ask me some law now.
Yeah. We'll do some law in a minute. So we'll start off by saying, what's your areas of expertise as a firm?
Well, again, this is something I'm learning to get better at describing because, again, I'm a bit of a master of all trades. Yeah. I was in-house lawyer for a long time, so I turned my hand to pretty much anything that comes across the business's desk, which is another reason why people call me up all the time.
Mm.
Because if it's contracts, leases, employment to a certain degree, I can help. So that's my sort of overall marketing message, but it's not always the best message because it's a little bit too general.
Yeah.
So I guess the thing that I want, and again we can talk about this a bit more technically because I wanted to pick on something that you picked up earlier about doing work globally, because I've had a client this morning only message me and ask me some questions about their contracts. So the key message for me to get out to people today is making sure that you have the right terms and conditions and the right contracts for any of the relationships and arrangements that you're in.
Sure.
So that's my sort of passion right now is getting the right terms and conditions for your business and investing in that.
Well, let's talk about that a moment because it's important, and I come across lots of startup businesses that ignore this because they go, oh, you know, and it's expensive and we're not there yet. But if you're starting out on a business journey, this is the place to start. It's not something you retrospectively go and fix, which is articles of association, shareholders agreements, and terms of business contracts are all the basics of starting a business. Yeah,
absolutely. So you've mentioned shareholder agreements. If you are in business with someone else and you don't have one of those, you really need to.
Yeah.
If I can tell you that I can sort it out if someone comes to me with a dispute between a business owner.
Mm.
I can, but it will take a long time and it will be very expensive.
And probably quite nasty.
And it'd be, and it's very, very draining and emotional.
Yeah.
Because people will come and say, I've fallen out with my business owner. We don't want to be in business together anymore. What can I do?
Mm.
And if you're a 50-50 shareholder and you don't have a shareholder agreement that has a mechanism in it that will navigate your way through this, you're just going to end up with fighting and arguing until you find your way.
Yeah.
And that is like a divorce. And that's
it's a prenup, basically,
it's
isn't
basically
it?
A prenup, And a decent shareholders agreement you should be able to get for, you know, a couple of thousand quid. But if you come to me without one, I mean, the last one that I did took 6 months and cost her about £2,000 a month on average in terms of my time.
Yeah.
In the negotiations, the discussions, her talking to her. You know, by the end of that, she said to me, I'll never make that mistake again. So
outside of all of that is the emotional heartache of going through it and the time and
all so that's one area. But then your terms and conditions are obviously managing, so that's managing your relationship between you and your business owner. And just so people know the extent of what a shareholder agreement can do, it can, for example, if you do decide that you no longer want to be in business together, you can have a process in a contract where one party notifies the other. There's a period of time. You can stipulate exactly all these individual points, how long that time should be, but then what should happen during that time. And if things don't happen during that time, there's a next step to the process. And the ultimate sort of solution is to wind up the business. And that's all set out in the contract. And therefore it's binding and people have to follow it. If you don't have that, then you just end up in a vacuum. And in the meantime, your business goes to the wall.
It goes down the pan anyway. Absolutely.
So, shareholder agreements are one area that I really, really urge people to think about. But back to terms and conditions, because I wanted to pick up on you talking about people doing business abroad.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a client this morning email me. They have a client in Mauritius, of all places. Very nice. I thought I might go offer to go and...
Yeah, it's worth a client visit, hey, isn't
it? Yeah. But she had three specific questions. So number one, she wanted to know what law would apply to the relationship, because she's over here, they're over there. She also has a set of terms and conditions, but she doesn't understand them. So she wanted to know if there was a clause in there that dealt with which law would apply and which courts would apply. And she also wanted to know if she could combine things like data protection and have rules that are her rules rather than having to comply with the laws of Mauritius, for example. So my answer to that question is yes, if you think about these things in advance. Now, your contract should always have a jurisdiction clause. So English law, you can apply English law to a business relationship.
Yeah.
And you can also have a jurisdiction clause, which says that if you do fall out, any dispute will be dealt with in the English courts. And that should be binding all over the world. Now, there are some areas where that doesn't work, but they're few and far between.
North Korea.
Possibly.
Yeah.
And also, you do always have the risk of implementing this stuff. So, you know, she doesn't pay your bill. Yes, you can go to court over here. Yes, you can get judgment. You've then got to take that judgment to a Mauritian court and get them to apply it.
Yeah, of course.
So it's not a complete foolproof solution, but it at least sets out the parameters of what you expect and it gives you something to go back to if there's a problem down the line.
Mm.
She was pleased to hear that, and we haven't quite looked at her terms yet because she hasn't sent them to me because I didn't draft them, but hopefully within there she'll have the right clauses already.
Right.
Because the other thing is, and picking up on your other point, it is a big investment. I do understand that. I understand, you know, lawyers' time is expensive. And one of the things that I really try to urge people to do is if you can't work with me, that's fine, but I'll signpost you to loads of different places where you can pick up something, and something's better than nothing. So might sound like bad business. My business advisor will probably wonder why the hell I say this, but it's all about that desire to help people.
Yeah.
So the FSB, for example, have a legal hub which is full of documents, which are all very good starting points.
Yeah.
And that's about 130 quid a year to be a member of the FSB, and you get all of that.
Yeah.
And there's a couple of other websites which again are very good value and have basic templates which will be a good starting point.
Yeah.
And I always say to the people, get something in place and then put it in your budget for another couple of years down the line to review your terms when you can, and get someone like me on board to do that then.
It's one of these, it's a truism, isn't it, that you get what you pay for, and of course peace of mind is a very valuable commodity, and it's okay saying, oh, I've had to pay £1,000 for this or £4,000 for that or whatever, but it all depends. Just recently my son's trying to buy a house.
Good luck.
Yeah.
6 months apparently now to conveyance.
So. Well, this one, I mean, he lives in France and he's trying to buy a house in the UK, so he engaged a surveyor and it was a grade two listed place as well. And the survey cost him $2,500. And the surveyor rang him and said, I'm not going to write a report. He said, I'm not going to waste the time on it. I'm going to tell you, if you buy that property, you're mad. Yeah, it's a wreck.
Wow.
You know, and he was really upset up front and said, oh, you know, I've just spent $2,500. I think it's the best $2,500 you've ever spent, Jamie. You know, because think of what would have happened if you hadn't have spent that and you'd have bought the property.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, although it's hard. But it's insurance, you know. It's, you know, every year you pay insurance, and you actually don't want to claim on it because that means you've had an accident.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it looks like you're throwing money after nothing, but that's what you're paying for.
Yeah, and you know, 90% of the time these documents will sit somewhere and nobody ever reads them. I do understand
never read
that.
Them. But, yeah.
But the time that you need them, you'll be very glad that you've got them.
I had to dig my... we kind of had a couple of conversations about this. I had to dig my lease out. 20 years ago, well, 17 years ago, I signed that lease, and we dug it out the other day because they tried to pull a stunt with us. And I went, I'm sure that was never in the lease. I can't remember what was in the lease. I was guessing. Anyway, we dug the lease out, and it turned out we were right. They tried... Well, landlord tried to send me a bill for car parking for 17 years. He said, you've never paid this. I hold on a minute. I never rented a car parking space. I've got car parking spaces, but it's all part of the rental. No. He wanted 17 grand or something, a grand a year for the last 17 years. Anyway, I managed to find a lease, and there was a clause in there that said it included parking. So he should have read his own lease as well, really, shouldn't he?
He's probably not even the same guy. It's not.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. He bought a building.
And everyone will try it on.
Yeah, exactly.
What I do is often a game of poker.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But having the right documents in place means you've got a bit of a card up your sleeve, you see.
Yeah, you know, without being funny, you've done some work for us. And one of the things I loved about what you did is how you did it. You did it with humanity, yeah. But a lot of lawyers are just process driven, yeah. And they'll go, this is the process, dosh, dosh, dosh. And then something will happen and they'll go, here's the next step in the process. You took the time to be human about it and to talk to both sides of the argument and just lay it out and go, you know, look, you're really wasting your time doing this. Why don't you just kind of do it like this? And I think that is a fantastic skill to have. And as a client, even if I would, if someone was suing me, I'd want you to be their lawyer. If you see what I mean, and the reason I would do that is because you're sensible about what you're doing.
I'm not out to make it as profitable as possible for me, which unfortunately the legal process is largely dependent upon things taking longer and being more complicated than perhaps they need to be.
Yeah.
And I'm not dissing my other fellow professionals, because there are some fantastic other lawyers out there, but the system unfortunately is designed to
I had a classic of that. Not this lease, another office lease I had. I was renewing a lease. Yeah, I'd had a lease for 10 years and I was renewing it for another 10 years. And I sent it to the lawyers and it was taking months. I'm like, what are you doing? And I lost my temper with them eventually. And I said, I want a full report on what you're actually doing, because I don't know why this is taking so long. And he spat his dummy out and he sent me a box full of papers, which was nonsense. It turned out he was arguing with the other solicitors about terrorism insurance and who should be responsible for the terrorism insurance. I went, hold on a minute. I couldn't give a flying toss about terrorism insurance. Yeah. Why are you even arguing about this? Oh, you should have it as a clause. No, I shouldn't. Yeah. If somebody blows my building up, the last thing I'm going to care about is who's getting the money after him, because I'll be dead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's another thing. I'm thank you for saying I'm a human lawyer, because that's what I feel it's like true. I do. I mean, the technical side of what I do is fairly sort of mundane, you know, really. You know, all lawyers should at my age and stage be able to deliver the technical side, but I do try to support people along the way, but also let them make decisions, because it's not for me to decide what part of a document or a process or a deal is important. It's for my client to decide that.
Absolutely. And I think it's also you know, important for people to understand that the law isn't always black and white either, you know.
Rarely.
It's rarely that, you know. You can get lawyers come along, barristers tend to be the worst at this, if I'm really honest. A barrister will come along and go, I'm an expert in X, Y, Z. Yeah, you've got a case.
They always say that at the beginning.
Yeah, yeah, and then as it starts to unfold,
to get near court, they say, "Oh well, I'm sorry, but your chances of success have reduced now."
Yeah, exactly. You
know? Now that we're actually getting to the court steps, we might have a little bit of a wobble.
Yeah,
yeah. No, it's never. In my opinion, it's very rarely black and white.
Yeah,
and we make a living out of making it look grey.
Yeah,
which is weird.
Yeah.
And then we don't understand the impact of the decisions and the process on the people that are involved.
Yeah,
and that's where I think I do really focus on.
Absolutely, you do. Mm. Yeah, and I can confirm that as a client of yours that you really do, and it's one of the fantastic things I like about what you do. Because I think it's important to have a human face on these things, because most people, when using a lawyer or the legal system, are normally under duress anyway, because they've got to a point when they've gone, oh my god,
you have to do it. You don't want to do it.
Yeah.
The only time I see people really happy is when we've done a deal and we sell a company and we're all cracking the champagne open.
Mm.
That's brilliant. Yeah. We all love that.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Yeah, you know, if you win, you're fine, aren't you?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well,
and everyone's
a win's
happy.
A win.
Because the sellers are happy, the buyers are happy.
Yeah.
Everyone's, you know, having champagne together.
Yeah.
You know, no one's arguing about warranties or anything at this stage. We're all just having a great, great day.
Yeah.
It'll have been a painful process to get there, but, you know, when we get there, it's brilliant.
Yeah, so. Which is great, apart from in 2 years' time when the earnout arrives and they all go, Oh no, you didn't meet the targets, and then it becomes a bum fight.
Don't do an earnout. That's my advice. Don't do an earnout. Take less up front. Well, you can do an earnout if you're confident. But of course, the trouble is, you do an earnout, you're not in control of the business anymore.
Exactly. Yeah. It's one of those really horrible things, isn't it? Because for a service business, as a buyer, you need some, you know, you're buying a business that's been built by somebody else. If that person walks away on day one, you don't know what you're left with.
Mm.
So that's the point of an earnout normally.
Mm-hmm.
But then as the recipient of the earnout, you've no longer got control over the business. So if they make decisions outside of you, you know.
It can work if you put some really, like, clever transition sort of requirements around the process. So I usually say to people, if they want to do an earnout, you need to stay on board, you know, for a period of time.
Mm.
You need to work with the buyer.
Yeah.
You need to have some decisions that will be run past you.
Yeah.
Some sort of thresholds where you're involved in the decision.
Yeah.
And if you're both working towards the same thing, which is you want to get your earnout and the buyer wants the business to be successful, if you're aiming towards the same goal, then it can work.
Yeah.
But you just have to be careful how you do it.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, try and make it a win-win scenario for everyone. That's another of my mottos, really. You know, if we're in dispute, it is possible to find a win-win scenario because nobody really wants to be sat around a table talking to lawyers, and nobody really wants to go to court.
Yeah,
it's not a pleasant experience, and even if you win, you often don't feel like you have.
I agree with you totally. Although you do come across some people that just can't get past thinking that they may have lost something. Do you know what I mean? I've got a particular person in mind that you may have spoken to as well at some point.
There'll always be people like that in life, aren't there? Yeah, I mean, they're everywhere.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. and that can be a problem because, you know, you can, you know, why you're just cutting off your nose to spite your face now.
People to avoid in my book are people that phone me up and say, it's not about the money, it's about the principle.
Yeah, yeah.
And I always sort of tread with a little bit of caution there because... Then they're on a bit of a mission, and actually I don't want to go on a mission unless it's a good thing for everybody.
So interesting stuff. All those basics are things that we need, and just final few minutes talking to you, Ali. Of course, employment law is now becoming a minefield with so many different things happening. I understand the government are now thinking about changing some of the rules about 48-hour weeks and all the rest of it, which was always a bit of a nonsense anyway. So things are changing in the employment law front, and again, you know, a lot of the things that happen in a business, especially a business that's been established a while, is we don't actually go back and retrospectively look at a lot of our contracts. Yeah,
yeah.
You know, I've been caught like that with my business is 25 years old. I've been caught with a few years ago now not having an internet process in my contracts or you know, social media process.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah, because they were written at a time when that didn't exist.
Yeah.
So it's not, you know, it's, you've got to be careful. It's not something that you've
it's
done
not static. No,
yeah, no, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, again, in my new spirit of delegation, I used to deal with a little bit of employment law, but it's such a fast changing world, and it's constantly evolving, and I'm not as over it as I would need to be if that's all I was doing. But I have this amazing employment lawyer. Well, I've got a couple of amazing employment lawyers, and mentioned one already, Gemma, and then others that I work with. So again, it's all about knowing where you need your experts.
Yeah.
And I, again, through 25 years of working and working with businesses generally, have a bunch of experts that I can call in at the right point.
Yeah.
And again, some of those experts are real specialists in certain areas. Mm. And there are some areas where, you know, you really do need. So data protection is, again, another area.
Absolutely, yeah.
Which is very fast moving. And again, I've a couple of people I work with who that's all they do. Mm. So I feel a bit like a GP in that if you've got a basic legal problem in your business, talk to me. For a start, I don't charge you just to have a chat. And then I'll either be able to solve the problem myself or give you some suggestions without even necessarily charging you, say, go off and try that for a bit and see what happens. Mm. But if it doesn't, come back to me. Mm. And then if it's not my area, you know, I'll have an expert that I can say, oh, we need a quick chat with so-and-so or so-and-so or so-and-so. So,
I think that's perfectly valid, yeah.
Can I ask Ali a question?
Yeah, she's going to come up with an innovation now.
No, actually, it's Ali's innovation. I wondered if you wanted to tell people about your workshops that you're going to be doing, Ali.
Of course, yeah. So these are designed for startups who don't have massive budgets, who will need all of these areas looked at. So employment, data protection, leases, licenses, contracts, lots of other little things that I've forgotten now. But it's a two-day workshop where we do the six main areas that you need to be aware of as a business. It doesn't necessarily for startups, it can be for any business. And you come along for 2 days, and by the end of those, and within that two-day workshop, you'll get the opportunity for one-to-ones with me. So some of the stuff will be more relevant to certain types of businesses. So we'll get one-to-one opportunity where I can say to a specific business, well, you need to look at this contract and this set of terms and conditions, or this regulatory thing. So if it's a food business, for example, they might need to look at certain food regulation, or sorts of different specific regulations that might affect different types. So yeah, it's a two-day workshop, by the end of which you'll leave with a real sort of overall understanding of the things that you really need to focus on, and also some documents that will serve as your basic templates to start you off, at least to start you off on a in a better place than having nothing.
I think that's fabulous. I think that's absolutely fantastic, and I think there's a massive demand for that. And it isn't just startups, as we were just saying, you know, established companies haven't gone back and looked at anything, even if they had it in the first place, and said, is this still relevant? Is, you know, because I'm sure
a health check, really, you know, it's like
exactly, you know, I mean, I'm sure there must be some things that people wrote in contracts 20 years ago that are now illegal, because, you know, you can't do that anymore, or whatever.
And if you're also in a B2C environment, so B2B, there's one set of rules, B2C, there's a different set of rules, you know, consumers have more protection than just standard businesses. Hopefully running one in January, I think, is the next one. So
when you know when you're going to run it and what the dates are, let us know, and we'll promote it, because I think that's a fabulous idea.
Okay, great. It's you have to pay for it, but it's like the same price.
Well, of course you
can come for free.
That's my girl.
You can as well, Terry. Oh, yeah. This is why I'm not very good at business now, because I give everything away for free.
All we did was look at her, didn't we? Yeah. And she went, okay, yeah, you can have it for nothing.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I've run them before. So when I first started working 2008, back into private practice, we were in the middle of a recession. I'd gone from being in-house counsel at ICI and Eurotunnel. I had no clients, and suddenly I had to find clients. So I went and ran this program for free, and I did it for free then because I could. And it was really successful, and I met people on that program who are now still my clients today, and they've gone on to build their businesses, and they've grown as I've grown. And so it's a new thing that I'm trying to get off the ground again, because although I'm really busy, and I just feel that there is a need, and people do need this level of support. And actually, at 350 quid plus VAT, it's a bargain.
It's an absolute bargain. It is, because so many people won't talk to a solicitor because they sit there and go, this is going to cost me a fortune. Mm. I'm not even going to ring and ask. I mean, I mentioned this to you. I've got a situation at the moment where somebody wants to write a contract for me for a deed of easement, okay? And I rang a specialist lawyer, and they went, it's going to be at least $3,500. What? $3,500 just for you to read a bloody contract? Are you sure?
They're not drafting it.
No. Oh, they're just reading it. I mean, the other lot have drafted it, and I'm going, really?
How long is the deed of easement? How many pages?
I've no idea. I haven't seen it.
If it's 100 pages, I sort of might have a bit more sympathy. But
yeah,
it's probably three.
Yeah. I mean, what it can't say very much, can it? It's about a drainage ditch. I mean, blimey. So
back to poo again.
Exactly. you know, but as a non-lawyer, I'm starting to think. Then I start to think. Hold on a minute. Is there something that I don't know that about why this is so dangerous, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, it starts getting really anxious. You're thinking, is there something I'm missing here?
Is there something I've not understood here that, if I don't get this right, they can repossess my house or something?
Yeah. Well, let me have a little triage maybe of it and see if I can, let me see what I think.
Oh, you're a star.
I know.
Well, at the moment, I've told them, because it's them trying to get me to sign a deed of easement, and at the moment I've said no, because what I actually said to them is, I'll sign it if you pay my legal
fees. Yeah, you get them to pay for it. Yeah, if you
sign my legal fees.
I mean, in all seriousness, I'm not a property lawyer, so I'm probably not your best person.
But again, a contract's a contract
at the end of the day. And a lawyer putting their eyes over it is better than you reading it as a non-lawyer. So, it's halfway there to at least giving you an idea of whether you do now need that expert.
Absolutely.
But ultimately, get them to pay for it. That makes the most sense.
Yeah, but they won't at the moment, so I'm not signing it.
There you go. You're not going to win out of it, are you?
It doesn't bother me. I don't need it. They need it, not me. Ali,
am I allowed to mention one thing?
Yes, of course you can.
It's got nothing to do. Well, it has got something to do with me. I just wanted to talk about something I'm going to tonight, which is a networking event in Swarling Manor, which is near Canterbury, near Petham.
Right.
And it's a networking event for people in the wedding industry.
Right, okay.
Okay, so anybody, which is a hard hit industry. Mm. So anybody who's in the wedding industry, I will try and find a way of sharing the booking link. In fact, you can just turn up. It's 6:30. At Swarling Manor tonight. It's a bit lastminute.com, and I'm going to be doing a little bit there about what people in that type of industry need to be aware of from a legal point of view. But there's a whole other opportunity to network. They're desperately trying to get people back on their feet after COVID. So it's their first event tonight, and if you're any way involved in that, then come along and say hi. That
absolutely. And it's an important industry as well, and it's a very high value industry. Your average wedding price these days is about $25,000, isn't it? So you need some proper decent contracts.
People got their fingers burnt in COVID for deposits and refundability stuff and all of that.
So get along to that tonight at
Swarling Manor near Petham in Canterbury at 6:30.
Fantastic. Ali, pleasure to talk to you as always. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Such good fun, such interesting stuff and informative stuff. If people want to find out about Ali Young Law, what's your website?
www.ali-young-law.co.uk. I'm going
to
change it.
It's way too long. Too many hyphens.
It's way too long. Yeah. Yes, that's rebranding exercise coming up. Watch this space.
I had a website recently that had like 7 hyphens in it, and you're thinking, no, it's not going to work.
Well, all of your social media tags are all just at Ali Young Law, aren't they?
They are, pretty much.
So it's straightforward.
Google Ali Young Law, you'll
find the hyphens.
Drop the hyphens.
Cool. We're almost at the end of the show now.
So I've got another message actually from Elle. And it is, please give We Do Social Media a shout out for our content planning and creation training on the 5th of October at Edenwood Place at 5:30 until 7:30.
And I've been to that and it's brilliant.
Fantastic. The Tenterton Folk Festival. Thursday the 29th of September to Sunday the 2nd of October. You can book tickets, you can book your campsite, and you can find out all the details about the event by going to tentertonfolkfestival.org.uk. So do check that out. What else we got here? Are you a standout small business that's achieved constant growth? There are 2 award ceremonies still to go in Kent, which is Maidstone and Tunbridge Wells. Business Awards 2022, they're free to enter. The categories in both awards are Creative Digital, Customer Service, Innovation, Startup, Small Business, Businesswoman of the Year, Family Business, Construction Business. Full details for your entry can be found at businessawardskent.co.uk. I will be presenting the awards in December, and the entries close in mid-October. And I think we've made it, Linda.
Wow, haven't we done well?
I think we have. I think we've made it. I think we've reached the end of another show.
Thank you so much to our guests. Both really interesting interviews. I mean, amazing.
Yeah.
Well done, guys.
Thank you.
Huge thank you to Terry Thorpe of DG East Vehicle Services, to Ali Young of Ali Young Law, to my fantastic co-host Linda Cloak, to all of you that tweeted emailed and joined in with the show. Thank you so much. We'll be back with another show next week.
And I'm helping you again.
And Linda is back here helping me again because Jules is still on holiday.
Oh, dear.
She's always permanently on holiday. Luckily, we got Linda to stand in for her. She's going to get jealous. She's going to start thinking, hold on a minute. Linda's done more jobs more than I have. I'm going to stop going on holiday or something.
No. I don't think so.
No. Do you not?
She'll be back raring to go.
Yeah.
I just want to check. Oh, look. Jules has been on.
Missing you.
Yeah. Left the adult kids in charge of the dog, expecting hijinks. I'm off to Valencia with a sore head. Yeah. We do social media. Please give us a shout out. Did you read this one?
I just read it. Yeah.
Oh, did you? I thought you might have done. And Sarah Marsh Collins says, I used to go to Hackney every Friday night to watch the Speedway.
Oh, there you go.
It's still there, is it?
Yeah. Cool. Right. We'll be back with another show next week. Thanks to everybody for joining in. And we'll see you all soon. Stay safe and thanks, all that.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
This is Channel 2.